Yes. Yeah, let me answer both of those questions. On the first one, the idea of the news shows promoting TV movies and so forth, of course they do that. The problem is, one of the biggest problems on TV is TV news and is so-called reality-based programming, because they call it reality-based programming, and what is it? I mean, Geraldo just did a, quote, reality-based program last week where he showed for the first time on live TV a sex change operation. I mean, do you know how few people get sex change operations, thank God? You know, this is reality. This is a sideshow. You know, when Barnum was displaying two-headed calves and little people 2 feet high, that's also reality. But it's a sideshow. It's not reflective. The difficulty with TV is this emphasis that you get in the news, in the talk shows, in the network programming, in the made-for-TV movies. God, this, haven't we had enough with Lorena Bobbitt? I mean, is this the most over-reported story of the 20th century, or what? You know, I'm sorry, but you know there are four different movies? There's one feature film and three made-for-TV movies about Lorena. You know who Lorena Bobbitt is, don't you? Yes. I mean, we just had lunch, but, you know, so this is a very big problem. What you're saying about NYPD Blue is interesting. I'm not familiar with the show. I don't watch a lot of TV. I mean, basically, I watch no TV. I did more TV watching to research my book than I had done in the previous 20 years combined. And I haven't seen that show. I've heard it's a pretty good show, and it's an interesting show. What people objected to with the show was not the violence. They objected to the nudity and the language. And what they objected to was not just a few instances of nudity and language. They objected to a very clearly deliberate attempt to change the standards, to push the envelope, to make it acceptable suddenly to say certain words on primetime TV that had never been said before, and to show bare buns and from what I understand, bare breasts in a way that had never been shown before on primetime TV. And the fear is not that particular one show, which I do understand is a quality show and has gotten pretty respectable ratings, but the fear is that becomes the new standard and then gets sent out into everybody's living room and makes it even harder to control what your children are exposed to. Gentlemen right here.
I recently saw it last week. Uh-huh.
Well, it's, you know, sure. I thought it was full of, I mean, I would have given it 3 stars. I certainly wouldn't have given it the Oscar for Best Picture of the Year, which was basically a recognition of Clint Eastwood, belated, and all that he's done for the industry, etc. But what's interesting about that is this has more violence, more sexual content, graphic sexual content. It begins, as you know, with the mutilation of a prostitute. It's such a bizarre statement when the Motion Picture Academy holds that up as the example of the finest our industry can achieve. It used to be that Oscar was fairly dependably handed to movies like Gandhi or Amadeus that were about something, that really tried to teach people something. What I liked about Unforgiven, frankly, was I thought it was full of good performances. I thought Hackman was sensational. I thought Eastwood was quite good. And it did seem to me to raise this profound question about the nature of evil and about the nature of redemption. And from a religious point of view, I mean, the movie seemed to contain the message that unless there is an inner transformation, simply stopping your external actions leaves you very amenable to being dragged back into the life of evil, to the life of the devil, if you will. And I thought it was a serious and an interesting and challenging film and a pretty good Western. But again, by my saying it was a fine film, I respected it much more than I respected Silence of the Lambs, which I just thought was a lurid freak show and had almost nothing to it, except a fine performance by Anthony Hopkins. Yes, sir. Well, you know, they made the question about Atlas Shrugged. She was very difficult. She was not thrilled about the way The Fountainhead turned out in the movie with Gary Cooper and Patricia Neal. Ayn Rand wasn't. And so she got very sticky about selling the rights to Atlas Shrugged when she was alive. And she was insisting that she have control, and they won't give anyone control. They just won't do that. Since her death, there have been at least four different serious efforts to make that movie. And that's because, though there are very few sort of what one would call mainstream conservatives in Hollywood, there are several Randroids and, you know, followers of Ayn Rand. And it's a difficult film to make because it would be very expensive. And I think also at the studios, there is a sense that, well, she's this right-wing nut. Let's leave it alone. I was telling David before, a friend of mine bought the rights to a fine book by Robert Conquest called The Great Terror. And paid a lot of money for the rights and wanted to make the movie. And actually was told by all the studios, you can't do this. The Great Terror is about the Stalinist purges. And that this is a warmongering movie, it can't be done. Political correctness is a very powerful force in the industry. And I don't think that we've gotten to the point yet where Atlas Shrugged would be considered politically correct. Though it has a built-in terrific advertising campaign, I've always thought, I can imagine all the billboards, who is John Galt? You know? Yes, sir. Okay, well, those are all different questions. And you raise a very important point, which is that we are in a very anomalous situation right now where we have more black stars who earn bigger money and have bigger audiences than at any time in the history of the industry. Forbes magazine does a list of the top paid entertainers every year. And I believe last year, 5 of the 10 top paid entertainers in America were black. And, you know, it's extraordinary. I mean, right now you have a whole generation of remarkably gifted black performers, the latest of whom is Will Smith, who's brilliant in Six Degrees of Separation. But Denzel Washington and Danny Glover and Morgan Freeman and on and on. People who are genuinely talented, but they're in front of the cameras, or sometimes they will work as directors. But you're absolutely right that in terms of the upper executive strata, nothing. In terms of national critics, nothing. There's one black critic I know of named Elvis Mitchell who does commentary for NPR. But I do want you to know that I know that they were trying to give Elvis Mitchell the slot at CBS News, and it didn't work out. I think that what you're dealing with here is, I know there have been statements that have been made by various spokespeople about some kind of organized attempt to keep black people out. I don't think that exists. I think that, frankly, there would be a, because of the whole political correctness craze, people would welcome, and they have in a number of the companies, trying to promote people into executive ranks. But this is such a brutally competitive industry. And until you find people who are trying to work in the executive suites the way that they've worked their way onto the sets and in front of the screen, I don't think anything will happen. I think that what you're hinting at least if I pick it up correctly, I would support and agree with very much, because I think it would be a terrific thing if some of these very successful black entertainers got together and launched some kind of company as an alternative. Black entertainment television, to some extent, tries to do that. Yes, gentleman right there.
Industry
Okay. Let me answer that, because I got to do it quickly. Come back to my analogy about the Lexus. In other words, I don't believe that the industry controls reality. In other words, I believe it influences it. They don't influence everybody. They influence enough people to matter. No.
But for 50 years, we have been shown films that give us this high sensitivity to the Holocaust, to the plight of the Jews and Germany under Nazis. If you look back at the number of pictures on the screen,
absolutely right.
Created something in our society, good, that made people sensitive to the plight of your family and others. If this law, where's the balance in that?
There's no balance. Absolutely. Well, let me try to respond to that too very quickly. I'm also concerned about that balance. I was talking to David before. I think it's absolutely ridiculous that we've had so many fine films and some not very good ones about the Holocaust, and almost nothing about the 50 million non-wartime casualties of the communists. It's a greater mass murder of our century, which has been totally uncovered, not covered at all in motion pictures or on television. They had this one HBO thing on Stalin. That's it, really. You know, that's getting its innings right now. And first of all, it's not comparable. I mean, historically, I personally am offended by the... No, but there's, I mean, Dances with... Okay, Dances with Wolves won the Oscar 3 years ago, and Geronimo is coming out this Friday, which is another politically correct vision of Native Americans. What I'm saying about this is, you know, you and I are agreeing. They didn't make Schindler's List out of commercial considerations. They made it because Steven Spielberg wanted to make it. People who are at his level of success, people who are at the level of success, frankly, of Danny Glover or Morgan Freeman or Denzel Washington now, can get a project made. They can decide what they want to see made. Why did they make a movie about Malcolm X? Warner Brothers, for $30 million. You think they had a market study? You know who didn't go to that movie? Young black males did not go. They failed at marketing that movie with young black males. But they made it because Spike Lee wanted to make it, and he was successful enough so he could do it. So the answer to this is, I think that what I would say is that were I running an executive office, and I'm not, is that it is appropriate, if they're going to do better at the box office, to have more of a sense of balance, and frankly, not to do so many of these personal indulgences. Because personal cause movies sometimes turn out very well, but sometimes they turn out miserably. And when you say who calls for the balance, the role in the industry where that's necessary is the people who are running the studios. One of the problems that's happened is it used to be in the old days of classic Hollywood, Harry Cohn or Sam Goldwyn or Jack Warner would, you know, somebody would come and try to make a project, and Sam Goldwyn's famous line is, if you want to send a message, go see Western Union. You know, I'm in the business of connecting with the public. I don't think that's a bad attitude. I think it's an appropriate attitude. And that might have meant that a great movie, Schindler's List, didn't get made. Or that Spielberg spent his own money instead of spending Universal's money. But the fact is, I think that kind of balance can only be healthy for the industry and for the country. Now, your last question? Right. Right. I'll tell you how you do it. Tune into sneak previews every week. You know, or find a critic, a print critic, or subscribe to the New York Post. Find a print critic that you trust, or a television critic that you trust, and pay attention. You know, it is amazing. It's a fairly big investment of time and money to go to the movies. And it's shocking how many people, you're right, do not even bother to make the most rudimentary investigation. Let me do three more questions very quickly. Yes, lady right here. Yes, it is, and I think that's true. The one area where television has improved is television has gotten less violent this year. It is raunchier. There's no question about it. I mean, this thing with Geraldo Rivera showing this man, this was like a surgical Lorena Bobbitt that he showed on the air. It was really gut-churning. Did anyone see this? I mean, it's the most extraordinary thing. It was on daytime national TV. With a live operation of a male having his sexual organ removed. And it got good ratings. Never again. It'll get good ratings once, not the second time. But no, you're right. TV has gotten raunchier. And part of the problem here is this is, you know, here's a question. Here's a conundrum. In actual terms, do I think TV is better today or better 20 years ago? There's no question it's better today. There are more alternatives. There's C-SPAN, there's Bravo, there's A&E, there's PBS. You know, why is it with all these new alternatives and some better shows on the networks as well that every survey shows that the American people think TV is worse than ever? That the American people are less likely to watch a TV show through to its conclusion? That for the first time since they've been measuring this, the last couple of years, the amount of weekly watching has gone down? This is amazing. With all these new alternatives, people are watching less TV. It's a blessing, but it's amazing. The reason for it is precisely what you're saying, is there's a general perception that TV has gotten raunchy, it's gotten dirty, I don't like it. It's corrupting my kids. Now, one of the answers to this, by the way, which I strongly support, is what people call a lockbox, which is going to be available widely in the United States. It'll cost you about $90. And you can then put that on your TV set and program in certain times of day and certain channels where the TV simply won't work. For instance, if you choose that your children should not watch that wonderful educational show, Beavis and Butthead, then you simply program it into MTV at the 10:30 hour when that show is on, and it won't work. Your TV won't receive MTV at those hours. Now, this is going to help fuel a revolution in American life. Congressman Edward Markey of Massachusetts has introduced legislation to require all TV manufacturers to include the lockbox as part of the equipment for new sets. Because while it costs us about $90 to buy one, it would cost the TV manufacturers, it'd add about $15 to the price of a TV. So it's interesting what's happening. This is coming just in time for the so-called 500-channel universe, which is one of the reasons it's so important to address these issues now before the whole picture changes, and you have even more of a difficulty in getting the idea across that messages do matter and people do have to become more discerning consumers. Last two questions very quickly. Yes, Ken. I think to some extent, yeah. I think you have more variety in print journalism. You know, there are conservative voices in print journalism. There are virtually no conservative voices on television. Rush Limbaugh is an obvious example, this example of an exception. The fact is that what you have right now, and it's very important everybody understands this, when you're talking about corporate structure, Warner Brothers controls not only Warner Brothers movies, they control HBO, they control Time Magazine, they control Warner Brothers Records, they control People Magazine. They control Premiere Magazine. They control Warner's Books, which is one of the largest. These companies are huge. If you look at Fox, you know, I mean, Fox is Rupert Murdoch. Controls two papers I write for, the Times of London and the New York Post, Fox TV, Fox Network, HarperCollins Publishers, TV Guide is a Murdoch publication. These are very powerful institutions. Disney has its own record label now, huge record label. And the fact is that what you find is partially because of that corporate organization is the same mindset in all divisions, in popular music, in television, in motion pictures, and very much in electronic journalism. I think it is somewhat different in print journalism simply because there are more outlets and more variety, just as it's somewhat different in radio. radio is the one area where, and I think that's one of the reasons that people are so disturbed at radio, because you hear all kinds of voices on radio that you normally wouldn't hear in television journalism. Last question, Paul. No, that's a very good question. Look, it's a very, very hot issue right now because of the GATT talks. And one of the issues that a lot of countries are concerned about is what we have been doing has been dumping our toxic trash abroad. You know, in other words, one of the questions that people often ask is, how is it that these studios stay in business if they're losing all this money on all this material? You know how it is? Because they make up for it by selling the stuff abroad. What's happened in the last few years is just as the American movie-going audience has collapsed and turned off, we've opened up huge new audiences in China and Russia and Eastern Europe. In Italy, they just built three times the number of theaters and put in air conditioning, which brings more people to theaters. In it, so what's happened is that the percentage of revenue from foreign sales to American studios has gone up from 30% in 1980, and they think that this year, 1994, it'll be the first year that a majority of revenues come from abroad. Now, this has been devastating to foreign film industries. The French are horrified at it, because they're the only robust film. It's destroyed British films. Because basically, people are fascinated with America. I believe that the reason that American films do so much better abroad than any other kind of films is not because they're better made, but because of the fascination with life in this country. The same reason that Italians buy American jeans and pay big money for it. It's not they don't make good pants in Italy. They do. A lot of studio executives wear Italian pants. But it's because there's a fascination with all things American. And I think that we're in danger of losing that partially because of the oversaturation of violence, but also one has to be concerned about the messages that are set out about this country and about the state of things in this country. I know that we're running late. I do want to say that I'm very grateful for your attention, for the opportunity to exchange ideas, and I hope we'll have a chance to talk in a few moments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael, and thank you all for joining with us and asking some quite perceptive questions. As I mentioned, Michael has kindly agreed to autograph copies of his book. If any of you have not gotten a copy, I highly recommend it. And we look forward to the opportunity of your joining with us at a future Independent Institute luncheon forum. Thank you for coming.